Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast.
Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. My name's Rich, the host around these parts. I'm so glad that you've decided to tune in. We know that you've got a lot going on in your church as you head into this weekend, and we're just honored that you would take some time out. I'm really excited for today's conversation, excited for you to learn and for us to lean in together and learn from Mark Hearn. Mark is a pastor of First Baptist Church in Duluth, Georgia. This is a great church for a number of reasons, but one of the things in particular, it really is a multicultural church. In the truest sense of the word, we're going to dive into that today and actually hear about kind of the transition from being a kind of monolithic culture church to a multicultural church. And when they do interpretation in a number of different languages. And so we're excited to have you on the show today, Mark. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Rich. Good to be with you.
Why don't you tell us, why don't we start with kind of tell us about Duluth, First Baptist Duluth today. Where if people were to arrive today, what would they experience? And then we'll rewind the tape and say, you know, what's happened over the, you know, these last few years.
Our church now has 42 different nationalities, making up our comprising our membership. Mm-hmm. When you come to our church, you'll find that we have staff members from Nigeria, from mm-hmm. Korea, from India, mm-hmm. As well as from the United States. Mm-hmm. We also host a Korean culture center a couple of days a week, as well as we have a satellite of New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, and we're the host of the Korean Training Institute the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. So you'll find music in different languages. You'll find people from literally the uttermost parts of the earth worshiping amazing. Together under one big giant umbrella.
That's amazing. That's incredible. Now, I would think, you know, if someone was to just say to me, tell me, you know, about First Baptist anywhere, that would not typically be the picture that I would, you know, would say. And that's not, I'm not criticizing First Baptist churches of the world. Something has happened. Something has transformed at, First Baptist Duluth here. Can we hear a little bit of that story? How did you begin this transition? What was it that, you know, started to change from what I would more typically, you know, think about when I think about, you know, kind of the kind of monolithic, you know, Anglo single, you know, culture church? Where did this all start?
Well, when I arrived here in 2010, that was not the congregation that mm-hmm. I came and began to serve. Mm-hmm. We were a 98-99% Anglo church.
Yep.
In a very rapidly changing community. Mm-hmm. And I moved into my home in a middle-class neighborhood in Duluth. Mm-hmm. My neighbors to the left of me are a cross-cultural couple. She's Vietnamese, he's Malaysian. My neighbors mm-hmm. to the right of me are South Asian Indian. Neighbors behind me are from Korea. Mm-hmm. Neighbors across the street are from Zimbabwe. Down at the end of the street, the cul-de-sac, mm-hmm. there's a doctor from Puerto Rico, and across the street from them is a multi-generational family from Nigeria, and mm-hmm. none of those people groups were in our congregation. Mm, so I knew that if we were going to reach our community, mm-hmm. my neighborhood was a microcosm of the entire community. Hmm. Duluth is one of the most diverse communities in all of America. Gwinnett mm-hmm. County, where I serve, is one of the most diverse counties in all of America, mm-hmm. and it's rapidly becoming that. Mm-hmm. It became majority-minority in 2010 census, mm-hmm. about 40 years ahead of the national curve. Mm-hmm. But what we're learning and what we're doing, I think, is something every city is going to have to face and do mm-hmm. in order to be effective in their local communities.
All right. This is why I want people who are listening in, this is why I want people to lean in. Every community of the, you know, the thousands, whatever, 5,000 people that are listening in today, your community is more culturally diverse today than it was 10, 20 years ago, and it is becoming more culturally diverse. That's just the reality. That is what's happening, which is amazing. You know, praise God, that's incredible. And the thing I love about this story is it really is a kind of an opportunity, even you, and you mentioned it there, you know, Duluth is 40 years ahead of the rest of the country or of the national average. And so walk us through. through. You know, what were some of the early changes? Change in church in any way is hard, but specifically, I would think cultural change and becoming a multicultural church is significantly difficult. What were some of those early changes that you were able to see your church step through, and how did you do it?
Couple of key things we honed in on immediately. One, our church was very mission-minded, very mission-giving church. Mm-hmm. So we decided to be very intentional about our missionary causes. Mm-hmm. We did some research as to what were the largest unreached people groups locally, mm-hmm. and we began to plant churches in those strategic areas. Hmm. We began with South Asia, India. Mm-hmm. We also moved from there to Mexico, eventually to Nigeria, and then to mainland China. Huh. Planting churches in areas where we saw a great population of people group in our local area. So when you come across someone in the local community and say, hey, I've been there, or our church is sponsoring a church there, and immediately you've got a conversation start.
That's amazing. That's cool. What a great tactic. I love that. What a fascinating thing about, hey, we're going to do something across the world to help us reach here, more. That's amazing. What other things did you do?
Another thing we did was, everybody loves a party, so we began to look at some opportunities that we could celebrate alongside of. Mm. I call this the difference of ministry with and ministry to. Mm. There are a lot of churches that do ministry to people groups in their community. They minister to the Hispanic population, or they minister to the African-American or the African population. Mm-hmm. But they don't come alongside of them and say, what can we do with you? Mm-hmm. So we began to have some celebrations that we would celebrate throughout the year to be able to have some cross-cultural exchange. Mm-hmm. We celebrate Indian Independence Day on the Sunday closest to August 15th every mm-hmm. year. Mm-hmm. We celebrate East Asian New Year because more than half the world population celebrates New Year on a lunar calendar as opposed to a solar calendar. Mm-hmm. So we celebrate alongside of them for East Asian New Year. Mm-hmm. We celebrate Tres Reyes Magos, Three Kings Day, a largely Hispanic celebration at Christmas time where the three kings bring the gifts to the children. And so we have a great big banquet with a mariachi band, and the three kings come and give gifts to all the children that are present. Hmm. We had a new one we just did last Sunday. We celebrated Island Sunday. Hmm. We have people from 9 different island nations, had a Caribbean lunch after church on Sunday morning. Had Caribbean music during our worship time. Mm-hmm. So we're just celebrating alongside of the people who live in our community, and that deference to one people group has an openness to all people groups mm-hmm. that, hey, these people love us for who we are mm-hmm. and desire to know who we are.
Now, what have you done on, I see when I'm, on your website that you've done interpretation of your services as well. I know sometimes, this question comes up, how do we provide, language and culture are so connected to each other, and how do we, what can we do on that front? And I notice you do live translation. Tell us a little bit about that process. What's that been like?
Well, language is the biggest barrier to try to cross culture. And so we decided to try our best to take that away. Mm-hmm. We knew that our schools are populated with people from all these different culture groups, and they're able to do it. How much more so should the church, with a much higher calling, be willing to go the extra mile to make this take place? Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of language churches in our area, mm-hmm. and we don't want to cast stones at that. But we say that's just disingenuous with what we're trying to do. We're not going to mm-hmm. have different language churches meeting at different times in our fellowship. Mm-hmm. But what we do is we have language Bible study classes that meet either on Sunday or during the week. And then we come together for a celebrative worship time, and we try to cross that language barrier. Mm-hmm. And God has provided us some outstanding interpreters. And we do live interpretation. Mm-hmm. People can check out a headset. They get the bulletin in their language, the sermon notes in their language, and they're able to hear someone speaking in their heart language, mm-hmm. telling them what's going on in the worship service and interpreting the sermon as it's being spoken. Mm-hmm. And many people are trying diligently to learn English, and it's a great language tool for them to learn English mm-hmm. as well as to hear the gospel in their heart language. Mm-hmm. It's been proven that the part of the brain that so emotionally responds to the gospel is the part of the brain that is operated by the same one, the same part of the brain that our language is operated by.
Oh, interesting.
So when you hear in your heart language, you're able to respond emotionally as opposed to just intellectually to something. So we want people to hear in their heart language so that they can grasp the entire scope of the gospel. So we began with Spanish, which is the largest language group in the area. We've moved to Korean, second largest language group, and we're about ready to add Mandarin Chinese, the third largest language group in our area.
Now, so the church I was, you know, part of, we've added Spanish as a translation. It's very similar. We had this interesting thing happen to us. So we've been doing Spanish translation. It's been probably 4 years, 3 or 4 years we've been doing it now. And very similar, you know, get your headsets, all that kind of thing. Now, interestingly, over that time, and I want you to comment on this, what we've seen is that our Spanish-speaking population has definitely grown. So you can see it in, you know, just in our services, you can see it. It's a part of, you know, infusing in our leadership, and we're seeing that happen, which is amazing. Now, interestingly, people aren't necessarily picking up the headsets. And what we hear from folks is the fact that you would go out of your way to have Spanish translation means that I'm accepted at this church, that this is a place that I can come, I can be a part of this church. Now, I speak English, and so I don't need the headsets, or I want to learn English, and so I'm taking this as an opportunity. But I love it when my mom or my dad, if they're going to come, you know, they can put on their headset, and so, or on a, you know, special days on, you know, Easter, Christmas, that sort of thing, you know, when I know I'm having guests here. So that's been an interesting lesson for me, because if you just went by the total number of people who picked up headsets every Sunday, you would say, oh, this isn't working. Why are we doing this? But actually, what that has shown is our openness to saying we want to be a multicultural church, and that has shifted. Give me a sense. Are you seeing that in other churches? Have you seen that sort of thing happen at First Baptist?
Absolutely. Exactly what you said. As I shared earlier, deference to any people group shows receptivity to all people groups. And just for instance, when we began Korean translation, we had zero attending Korean families. Now, that's a large people group in our area. And kind of the old adage, if you build it, they will come. If you interpret it, they will come. We began with a lady who was interpreting literally for her own practice to herself. Her husband listened to to grade her on how she was doing. They began to invite other Koreans to come. We now have, on average, between 40 and 50 Korean participants in our worship service every single week.
That's amazing.
Only about 10 or 12 of them take the headsets. But what that does is it opens them up to invite their Korean friends who might have limited English skills to say, oh, this is a place for all people, and it's a place where you're going to feel very involved and very much a part. So absolutely, absolutely, it shows your receptivity to be able to have all people groups become a part of the body.
Now, how has this changed your preaching, your communication, you know, as because, you know, language is one thing, but there is you know, cultural innuendo and you know, just stuff built into our language that I know for me, as we've stepped into this a little bit, we still have a long ways to go, we have to learn from folks like yourself. You know, we're just learning all the time, like, oh my goodness, there's so much cultural stuff that I just took for granted. How has this changed, you know, you as a communicator?
Well, it certainly is a learning curve process. My interpreters consistently tell me, hey, that was an American phrase that doesn't interpret well, or we may need to know it ahead of time. I've tried to simplify some of my illustrations, as well as the use of humor, trying to be certain that it crosses cultural barriers. Another thing is I use PowerPoint in my messages. And I've tried to make sure that all of my slides, photographs and things, are reflective of diversity. Just to be sure that that mental image that someone has when they're watching the PowerPoint slides, hey, this is a place where where there's a receptivity.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, this has been great. One of the things I notice when I'm, you know, on your site is, you know, you have a very multicultural staff. You know, your leadership clearly is reflecting, you know, the kind of missional drive of your church to try to become more multicultural. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Has that been intentional, or has that kind of fallen out? There's a cart and horse issue there, you know, with this. How has that related as you've, you know, looked at, you know, kind of your leadership?
Oh, it's been very intentional. One of the things that I believe has to happen in order for multicultural to take hold is there has to be shared leadership. Mm-hmm. And it began with our deacon body. This is a 130-year-old Southern Baptist church. Mm-hmm. And actually, in a deacon's meeting that I was not present in, it was a summer deacon's meeting where I was gone away on vacation. The chairman of the deacon says, "We're about ready to elect deacons for the coming year." So during our nominating process, we need to really seek out some people of diversity whom we feel would make a difference on this deacon body. And we ordained the first five non-American-born deacons in the 130-year history of the church. We've added another three people of diversity since that time. And then the same thing with our staff, to be able to, as we were rebuilding staff over a period of time, to look and see people whom can help us to reach across cultural barriers. One thing we've been very careful about, we do not have a minister to the Korean community, a minister to the Hispanic community. Yep. These are people that are ministers to the church body who happen to be Korean, who happen to be Nigerian, who happen to be South Asian Indian. Because the one thing we didn't want to do is to segregate our body based upon leadership.
That's very good. That's very good. You know, I think our instinct can be, like you say, to just kind of narrow down and say these people are going to, you know, reach out, as opposed to, hey, we're all together in this. This is amazing. I hope people that are listening in are catching both a bit of the heart and even just some of the early, you know, lessons that you've laid out. Now you've actually written a book about this that I would love for people to pick up. It's called Technicolor: Inspiring Your Church to Embrace Multicultural Ministry. Fantastic resource that just came out. Tell me why you wrote this book. Why was it that you were, you know, you said, I want to pull this all together. That's a tremendous amount of work outside of just your normal ministry. Why did you decide to write this book?
Very early in the process, I began to seek resources, books, or just people whom have traveled this journey and could help me to understand what we're facing and how that we could be effective. And what I found was just a dearth of materials. There's just practically nothing out there, especially about transitioning an existing church. There's several things in there about several things out there about planting intentionally multi-ethnic churches, but very little about transitioning churches. Matter of fact, the only book that I could find, The Color of Church, written by Rodney Wu, a fellow Southern Baptist, published by the same publisher that published my book in 2009. So it had been years since anyone had even written on the subject, and very little being shared about it. So I shared that with several people whom I have confidence in. They said, you need to journal your journey. You need to tell people what worked for you, what didn't work for you, what were the trials, what were the errors. And so that's what this is. This is a journal of a 7-year journey, going from a monolithic church to a very multicultural community. And it has both trials and triumphs within it. It's got hardships. It's got here are the folks who opposed it and why they opposed it and how we dealt with it.
Yeah, this is amazing. The thing I love about this story, I love about the book, I love about your leadership is exactly that. Leaders who are listening in, you know, all of our churches, we need to become more multicultural. This is a, you know, it's not only a gospel imperative. Ultimately, that's where the kingdom ends up. But it's a strategic imperative. We have to also think through in our particular communities and how we do this. And a part of what I love about what Mark has done here is he's laid out for us some real practical, tactical steps. Change in church is hard, and he's really walked through this and made it. It's a great resource for us to wrestle through. So I would strongly encourage you to pick one up. If people want to grab a copy of this book, Mark, where can they do it? I'm assuming Amazon. Where else could they pick up the book if they're interested?
anywhere where Christian books are sold. It's a product of Broadman Holman, Lifeway stores, but also any Christian bookstore, as well as Amazon, anywhere you can order it.
Great. Well, is there anything else you want to say to our listeners before we move on to the lightning round, the way we wrap up the show?
We are in the process of putting together a first-time ever Technicolor conference. We're trying to gather together people for the very purpose of trying to help people in transitioning churches in particular. Mosaics Global Network, a national organization that's helping churches come together to just resource together, is sponsoring that conference, but it's also being co-sponsored by Lifeway Christian Resources, New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, the Ethics Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, the Georgia Baptist Convention. So God's doing some neat things to bring people together, and we've not set a definite date. We're hoping for late January, early February 2018, but we've got a website that we're in the process of building, www.technicolorconference.com.
This is the Unseminary Podcast, stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Well, we're going to jump into the lightning round, that part of the episode where we answer similar questions of everybody that's on the show. Today, we've been just honored to have Mark Hearn with us from First Duluth, a great church that really has had an incredible transition over these last number of years, last 7 years or so, around transitioning, really becoming a more multicultural ministry. Mark, what is an online resource that you've been using these days that's been helping you out?
I just mentioned Mosaics Global Network, and they've got several resources on their webpage. That's a resource that I would recommend anyone who's traveling a multi-ethnic journey.
Great. So, yeah, their website is Mosaic, MOSAIX.info. You can check them out. They do a great job for sure. What's a book you've read, I don't know, in the last 6 months to a year that's shaped your thinking, shaped your ministry?
I've just finished reading The 3D Gospel by a guy by the name of Jason George. And it has really opened my eyes that the gospel is the same for every culture, but there's dimensions to the gospel that are communicated differently in every culture. I would highly recommend The 3D Gospel by Jason Georges.
Very cool. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, who would you want to get that with and why?
Oh, Dr. Billy Graham, no doubt about it.
Fantastic.
The person who has really shaped the world with the gospel in my generation, I would want to just spend 15 minutes with him would be awesome.
And even on this issue specifically, in a lot of ways, he was a forerunner in, really trying to build bridges and, you know, work together with people from a wide variety of backgrounds.
Absolutely.
That goes back decades in his ministry for sure. That's great. Well, I know leading a church like First Duluth is a lot of work, a lot of output, takes a lot of energy, and then writing and conferences and all that. Gosh, that's, I don't know how you keep up with all that. But in your personal life, when you just want to kick back, relax, have some fun, what do you like to do?
Well, I love to read. I'm a prolific reader. But other than that, I love to run. I just started doing this in the last couple of years. And when I run, I just have so much better day. Matter of fact, I just came from my run this morning before our podcast. So those two things are things that keep me going intellectually and physically.
That's fantastic. Well, Mark, if people want to get in touch with you or with the church or, you know, with Technicolor, all that, what's the best way for them to do that?
Our website is duluthbaptist.org. That's a great way to get in touch with us. I would certainly encourage you. I try to return emails within the next day or within the week at least, and you can get in touch with me through there.
Thank you so much, Mark. Really appreciate being on the show today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being able to share the Technicolor journey with you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com, and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch, or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.